Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio. 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 Black Hole
Radio. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Not So Mad Science. I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Welcome to the city of Detroit, Motown. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to California doesn't mean Detroit lost its soul. Welcome to Not So Mad Science. I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad. We have an interesting show for you tonight, and mostly because it's going to be just me, and God willing, dear family, friends, naysayers, supporters, what have you, each will have their opportunity in turn to call into the show tonight to give your viewpoint and your opinion. Everybody gets their opportunity for their 3 minutes of fame on Not So Mad Science to share your pearls of wisdom. But as always is the case, be prepared to be challenged on what you say. Be prepared to give evidence on what you say. Be prepared to prove out what you say. So that call-in number is 323-927-2913. Once again, that number is 323-927-2913. That's the call into Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. So let's get started. I want to hit you with a piece of social science that has been pinging in my ears and in my head back and forth for a little while now since I came across it. And I want to open that bit of social science with this. It was 1776 that the American colonies declared their independence from Britain, from England. 1776. But did you know, less than 100 years later, in 1876, and we spoke about this once before in a couple of other shows, Belgium's King Leopold in Leopold II in 1876, he convened a geographical conference in Brussels that ended up in the genocidal destruction of the people of the Congo, where upwards of 10 to 15 million citizens of the Congo in the country of Akibulan, present-daily called Africa, were murdered just 100 years later in 1876. But the question we got to ask is, Brother Harold, what is your point in constantly bringing this up? Is it to go along with the idea that our Jewish brethren, bless their hearts, do never again? In part, yes. When you see a good thing done, you model yourself after the good thing you see done. When a proper course of action is followed and you see that, it behooves the thinking person to follow that proper course of action. So yes, I'm going to keep putting it out there. Yes, never again. So what's your point, Brother Harold? Did you know And I'm quite sure, I don't know how heavy it has hit the mainstream news, but I do know it has hit my area of news. In October of 1937, Dominican dictator Rafael Trujillo, T-R-U-J-I-L-L-O, ordered the endless killing of Haitian migrants along the country's border, where Haiti borders the Dominican Republic. He did this to differentiate between black Dominicans and Haitians, so the story goes. Soldiers obliged rural workers to say parsley or perillo in Spanish, pronouncing the R, as I understand it, for our family who are native to, or I should say, I don't want to say native, indigenous to the Haiti side of the island of Hispaniola. Because of their Creole, they have difficulty pronouncing the R. So that failure in the linguistic test would mean the execution of you. So in 1937, between 9,000 to 20,000 Haitians died over a five-day span, an episode that then U.S. Ambassador in Santo Domingo called a systematic campaign of extermination in his communique to then-sitting President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Anti-Haitianismo, or the anti-Haitian sentiment, is a historically strong component of Dominican nationalism. After its independence in 1804, Haiti occupied the Dominican Republic for over 20 years, infuriating the Dominican Republic's financial elite. During the 19th and early 20th century, the Dominican inteligentsia extolled their Hispanic and Catholic roots to distinguish themselves from the African and so-called voodoo elements of Haitian culture. This strain of anti-Haitianismo reached a new level under Trujillo, who, apart from exterminating Haitian immigrants, criminalized voodoo and commissioned prominent intellectuals to defend his hard-line approach. On the 76th anniversary of what is called the Parsley Massacre, those of Haitian descent continue to suffer from violence and discrimination. And the situation is not improving, such so that just last week, or almost just over a week ago, the Dominican Constitutional Court upheld a policy that denies citizenship to the children of undocumented immigrants. But a new constitution has since laid out stricter requirements. Many assumed that it would only affect those born after the policy change, which is understandable. But the officials are applying this new rule of law retroactively to include anyone who immigrated from Haiti to the Dominican Republic since 1929. This decision will impact 200,000 of the 1.2 million people of Haitian ancestry living in the Dominican Republic, many of whom have few or no ties to the homeland after the decades of living abroad. Life for these migrants will become especially difficult since Dominicans are required to present a birth certificate for routine purchases such as a cell phone or to go to school. Complicating matters further is that these documents must be renewed every few months. Already 40,000 people have been denied identity documents, even if they had them previously. Possessed them previously. or the status of another 16,000 is currently under review. Just a few days ago, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights blasted the policy as disastrous, leaving tens of thousands in a state of constitutional limbo, stateless, and without access to basic services. Government officials of the Dominican Republic assert that there will not be mass deportations as a result of this policy. But since August 2012, over 47,000 undocumented Haitians have already been deported. This figure is double that of the previous year. Not only are these campaigns large scale, watchdog groups have criticized the deportation as inhumane. Over the summer, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights condemned the death of Jean Robert Laws, a young Haitian who died at the hands of agents during an immigration sting. The same operation, the commission feared, also resulted in the serious head injury of a three-year-old child. The IACHR has also filed a lawsuit against the country for what it characterizes as collective and mass expulsions of individuals affecting both Dominicans and foreigners, and both documented and undocumented persons who had their permanent residences in the country and strong employment and familial ties with the Dominican Republic. Phenotypically, and I'm going to spell that word out for you in case you don't know, P-H-E-N-O-T-Y-P-I-C-A-L-L-Y. Phenotypically African characteristics and dark skin, the commission concludes, are the decisive factors during repatriation operations in which individuals are deported to Haiti without any legal recourse. Brother Harold, this is not so mad science. Why are you giving us this bit of history, past, present? Why are you sharing this with us? I'm sharing this, dear family, brothers, sisters, friends. Am I saying this because I have Haitian relatives? Yeah, I do. Am I Haitian from Haiti? No, I'm not. But as my father would say, anytime I'm looking at a black man, I'm looking at God. Well, the people of Haiti are black like me, and I feel their pain and I feel their suffering. The people of the Dominican Republic are black like me, yet their willingness to fall victim to the ignorance of white superiority and black inferiority has created such a schism on the island of Hispaniola that we are looking at the genocidal destruction of a people that cannot be allowed to continue. We must find a better way. The island of Hispaniola is not that large, yet it is subdivided into two parts, one part called Haiti, one part called the Dominican Republic. Can we all just get along? I wanted to share that with you because this concept, this idea of the mass destruction and killing of people is not new. Transatlantic slave trade murdered more people of color than any other enterprise in history. You did it before. You did it again in the Congo. You did it again in Haiti, on Hispaniola. And now you're doing it there to them again a second time. How much are you willing to endure? And when do you decide to grow up from your insanity? We live in the time and what must be done. I just wanted to share that with you. I got one more piece of social news to share, because we're talking about not so mad science. And the social sciences are equal in value, in presence, and in and in need for study as much as biology, chemistry, physics, and all of the other mathematical sciences. In Diversity Chronicle, article written by Ivan Fernando, Mr. Fernando is writing about a professor of note, a professor who is well-read, a college professor who is well-studied, a college professor who is well-respected in his field of study and instruction. But on November 18th of this year, a college professor urges white male students to commit suicide during class. Now, immediately, that should jump out and say, what the hell happened here? Is he drinking? This is a white professor telling his white male students they need to commit suicide. So let's take a look and see why. Once again, that number is 323-927-2913. Call in to Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, right here in the city of Detroit, and share your thoughts as we continue this discourse into the social sciences. This college professor, Professor Ignatiev, I-G-N-A-T-I-E-V, he says this: if you are a white male, you don't deserve to live. You're a cancer. You're a disease. White males have never contributed anything positive to the world. They only murder, exploit, and oppress non-whites. At least a white woman can have sex with a black man and make a brown baby. But what can a white male do? He's good for nothing. Slavery, genocide against Aboriginal peoples, and massive land confiscations, the Inquisitions, the Holocaust. White males are all to blame. You maintain your white male privileges only by oppressing, discriminating against, and enslaving others. Professor Noel Ignatieff, a tenured professor at Massachusetts College, loudly proclaimed to his class 2 Mondays ago, his final teaching day before retirement. The good professor's sound and reasonable words resonate with every enlightened and progressive mind. They are indisputable, and no one can debate them. They should not be controversial in the slightest, yet remarkably, a few far-right extremists object to Professor Ignatieff's advice. The professor, however, reported receiving a standing ovation from his largely white middle-class students. Professor Ignatieff's critics say that openly calling for students, even if they are white males, to kill themselves was inappropriate and perhaps excessive. In this article, we will look at the other side of the issue. The writer says, fortunately, I was able to arrange a telephone interview with the professor. We will be reaching out for him for Not So Mad Science as well. I just want you to know. That number is 323-927-2913. I felt he deserved a chance to tell his side of the story, a side that our radical and racist far-right media refuses to report. The transcript of our dialogue follows below. Mr. Fernando asks, I want to thank you for agreeing to this interview. It is a pleasure to be able to talk to an esteemed academic of your caliber and impressive credentials. Professor Ignatieff replies, thank you. I'm happy to talk with you today. I understand that a few people objected to your advice to your white male students on your last day of teaching. What do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Professor Ignatieff replies, I chalk it all up to white supremacist attitude. The goal of destroying the white race is simply so desirable. It boggles the mind trying to understand how anyone could possibly object to it. Those who object to my advice, knowingly or perhaps unknowingly, are themselves white supremacists. They wish to go on oppressing and exploiting other races and maintaining their own privileged positions of power. That is the conscious and sometimes subconscious motivation of all of my critics. That is why they object to destroying the cancer of humanity known as the white race. That ugly disease which dares to call itself a people and a culture. Mr. Fernando then asked, all whites or just white males should commit suicide? The professor replies, obviously, all whites need to be destroyed, but why not start with white males? They are behind most of history's greatest atrocities. Besides, some of the brothers like to bang white women. Eventually, white women can breed out. But my feeling is that if you are a white male, you should kill yourself now. If you are a thoughtful person with a social consciousness who considers himself white, you will consider suicide. It is the right thing to do. Let me read you an email that I received today from a xenophobic white supremacist. I'm not a racist. In fact, I am an avowed anti-racist. I just think calling for all white males to kill themselves is extreme. When you say that every white person is bad or an advocate, violence, or an advocate for violence against them, it sounds almost as though you are becoming a kind of racist yourself. You say it is good for everyone to be proud of their culture, blacks, Mexicans, and everyone else. Why should whites be the only exception for the sake of argument, supposing whites have wronged many other races? Historically, should we punish people today for their ancestors' sins? Today, minorities have affirmative action and generous social welfare programs to protect them. Can we really say that most whites are racist now that the government is? Should blacks who descend from blacks who owned or sold slaves feel guilty and be punished for ancestral wrong? Mr. Fernando says, wow, as he begins to laugh. The professor says this, I know, mind-boggling. What an absurd and irrational line of reasoning. They just throw logic out the window entirely. It's impossible to dialogue with these people. Notice the blind and irrational hatred behind every word. No one has committed violence, genocide, and dispossession on the level of white males. The whole purpose of white male culture is to perpetuate their privileged status and to continue their oppression of non-whites. Whites don't have a culture like other races in which tradition and customs are preserved as an expression of a common identity. White culture is an entirely economic and social culture which is about shutting out other people deemed non-white as a means of preventing their social and economic advancement. In other words, all of white culture, so-called, stems from hatred of other. Unlike other ethnicities, which do have culture, white people are a disease, they are a parasite, they don't deserve to live. Mr. Fernando then asks, yes, absolutely. Could you give us some examples, though, for our readers regarding the racist nature of white culture? The professor replies, Columbus Day. Whites literally celebrate the genocide of non-whites, delighting in it. Thanksgiving Day. Whites honor the pilgrims who gave Native American blankets deliberately infected with smallpox to kill their babies. Yeah, it's about being thankful. Thankful that whites butchered most Native Americans so they could steal their land and establish a racist society based on white male privilege. Christmas is also racist. Should I go on? Mr. Fernando says, please do. The professor goes on to say, the idea of celebrating the birth of a Middle Eastern Semite, yet portraying him as a Nordic white person in visual art is not only racist, but obscene and anti-Semitic. Of course, there is Santa Claus as well. Who is he? A bearded old white man. He lives at the North Pole. It doesn't get much whiter than that. Who works for Santa? Of course, elves. Diminutive, perhaps slightly brown people with pointy ears who have been enslaved by a privileged white male. I'm sorry to chuckle, but this is outstanding. That number again, brothers and sisters, 323-927-2913. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad. Christmas and white culture disgust me, says Professor Ignatius. I hate this time of year so much. I hate going outside and seeing Christmas trees or Christmas lights. They should be banned. A Christmas tree is just one notch above a burning cross, in my opinion. Wow. Mr. Fernando then asked, what do you suggest that people do for the holidays, especially minority families who may feel pressure to celebrate Christmas or other European racist holidays? Is there an alternative? The professor replies, a great black professor in the 60s came up with Kwanzaa, a way to celebrate African heritage. Hopefully a Mexican-American equivalent will soon be developed as another Christmas alternative. Mr. Fernando says, I'm sorry, but we are starting to run low on time. Let me ask you, have you suffered any attacks personally or received any threats for your advice to your students during your final class? The professor laughs, no, I haven't. In fact, all of the responses I have received, except for a few emails, have been positive. I feel vindicated. Perhaps we are finally coming to an awareness in this country that the cancer known as the white race must be obliterated, especially in the form of white males. Obama is president, and I think there's an excellent chance that we will never have a white male president again. I think we are witnessing the breaking of the back of the white male power structure. We will still have residual white males that must be dealt with. But I am confident that we won. Eventually, I would like to put the white males in concentration camps and work them to death, just like they've done everyone else. When they are all dead, we can throw a party and dance around their corpses. Now, what I want you all to consider is that Professor Ignatius, and I'm going to spell that name again, Professor Noel Ignatius, and you can look this up yourself if you want to, I-G-N-A-T-I-E-V. He was a tenured professor at Massachusetts College. A white male. This is not coming from what many would call flame-throwing, anti-white, race-baiting, race-hating, Ungawa black power type people. No. This is coming from one of your elite, one of their social historians. I didn't write this. No, sir, I did not. These are his words. This is his historical research. Now, I close out this portion of Not So Mad Science with this particular article written by Ivan Fernando to footnote the destructive nature of what was done during the transatlantic slave trade. Never again. What was done in the Belgian Congo by King Leopold II or III. Never again. To lay eyes of discriminating decision on the tragedy which is taking place on the island of Hispaniola by the lighter white population of the Dominican Republic against the darker people of that island from the side called Haiti. And I was listening to a DVD some days ago in my car as I was driving home with my family. And these words ring just as true now as they did back in 1985. Student Minister Abdullah, he says, had we united at the murder of Eleanor Bumpus, or rather, had we united at the murder of Michael Stewart, there would have been no need, there would have been no crime around the time for the murder of Eleanor Bumpus. Well, let's fast forward this. Had we united then, there would have not been a Trayvon Martin. Had we united then, the murder of the young brother at the BART station in San Francisco would not have happened. An interesting historical observation as we go to 2 minutes past the 7:30 hour here on Not So Mad Science on the Black Hole Radio Network. Had we united around the Tillman Bay, none of these things would have happened today. None of these things. Heed the call, y'all. Heed the call. Accept your own and be yourself. Heed the words of the Messiah in our presence today. I got to say it. He's not just a Jesus. He is a Messiah, the messenger in our presence today. Heed the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Pay attention. Take hold. Grab it in your heart and in your mind. This is the day of discrimination, the time of decision. As he repeats the word of our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be his name. The exalted Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, accept your own and be yourself. Seven greatest words a black man has ever said. This is the time and what must be done. So we're going to take a quick break here at 7:34 p.m. here on the East Coast. And I pray that all who are listening out there to Not So Mad Science, that you allow this to percolate in your mind a little bit. Honor me with your presence today by calling in and make a comment about what we've just shared. We began with a pattern of history that cannot be shadowed away. We began with a pattern of behavior and ended it with the words, not of a black supremacist or black supremacy, blacks over whites. No, we close out this segment with the words of Professor Noel Ignatieff of Massachusetts College. These are words that you should think about. And I'll say it again. If you are a white male, you don't deserve to live. You are a cancer. You are a disease. White males have never contributed anything positive to the world. Why would this man go there? What does he know? What has he seen in his study as a professor of history? So we're going to take a quick break. The time is now 7:36 p.m. We'll be right back on Not So Mad Science as we get into the nitty-gritty in the land of science. Be right back.
Black Hole Radio and the FOI Board of Directors present The Final Call.
The Final Call. The Final Call is the country's unique leading source for news. Founded by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam, The Final Call follows in the tradition of Muhammad Speaks with hard-hitting national and international news and coverage of political issues. It is the official communications organ of the Nation of Islam. Founded in the 1930s as The Final Call to Islam, the newspaper evolved into Muhammad Speaks in the 1960s and boasted a circulation of 900,000 a week with monthly circulation of 2.5 million. Today, The Final Call newspaper serves a readership of diverse economic and educational backgrounds, including circulation in North America, Europe, Africa, and the Caribbean. Read The Final Call newspaper. Can find one of the beautifully bow-tied representatives in your community or read finalcall.com.
I have searched all over the world for 100 years, preserving my life by eating this one small berry. What have I been searching for? Black Hole Radio, and I have finally found it on Blog Talk. Now I can die happy. Goodbye.
Brothers and sisters, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Student Minister Abdul Hafiz Muhammad, and the believers cordially invite you to visit Muhammad's Mosque No. 7, located at 106-8 West 127th Street, Harlem, New York, between Adam Clayton Powell and Malcolm X Boulevards. Meeting times are Sundays, 10 o'clock a.m., Wednesdays at 8 p.m., and Juma prayer Fridays at 1:15 p.m. For more information, dial 212-865-1200. Once again, 212-865-1200 or www.mosque7.org.
And now, we return to Not So Mad Science on Black Hole Radio.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science. I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here in the city of Detroit, Michigan. The time is now 7:39. And I'm going to hit you with some more social science. Just got to do it. I can't help myself. Somebody else has control over my mouth. This is like the outer limits. We control the horizontal. We control the vertical. You will see what we want you to see. And right now, somebody else wants you to hear this. So I got no choice but to share it. This comes from a blog written by Pat Dollard, a political pundit, if you wish. I'm going to read an excerpt on Pat Dollard's blog from the Northern Colorado Gazette newspaper. This article goes as this. Using the same tactic used by gay rights activists, pedophiles have begun to seek similar status, arguing their desire for children is a sexual orientation no different than heterosexual or homosexuals. Critics of the homosexual lifestyle have long claimed that once it became acceptable to identify homosexuality as simply an alternative lifestyle or sexual orientation, logically, nothing would be off limits. Gay activists have taken offense at such a position, insisting this would never happen. However, Psychiatrists are now beginning to advocate redefining pedophilia in the same way homosexuality was redefined several years ago. Did you know that it was in 1973 the American Psychiatric Association declassified homosexuality from its list of mental disorders? A group of psychiatrists with Before You Act recently held a symposium proposing a new definition of pedophilia in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders of the APA, the DSM-MHD. Before You Act calls pedophiles minor attracted people. The organization's website states its purpose is to help mental health professionals, again, help mental health professionals learn more about attraction to minors and to consider the effects of stereotyping, stigma, and fear. Did you know, in 1998, the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, issued a report claiming that the negative potential of adult sex with children was overstated, and that the vast majority of both men and women reported no negative sexual effects from childhood sexual abuse experiences. I'm going to give out that number again. 323-927-2913. You got to call in on this one. Because this is your babies out there now. 323-927-2913. And make sure you push the number one so that the engineer can get you in the queue. I'm going to say this again. Did you know in 1998, the American Psychiatric Association issued a report claiming that the negative potential of adult sex with children was overstated, and that the vast majority of both men and women reported no negative sexual effects from childhood sexual abuse experiences. Pedophilia has already been granted protected status by the federal government. Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act lists sexual orientation as a protected class. However, it does not define the term. Republicans attempted to add an amendment specifying that pedophilia is not covered as an orientation. However, the amendment was defeated by Democrats. Representative Al T. Hastings, Democrat from Florida, stated that all alternative sexual lifestyles should be protected under the law. Whoop. This bill addresses our resolve to end violence based on prejudice and to guarantee that all Americans, regardless of race, color, religion, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability, or all these failures and fetishes and isms that were put forward need not live in fear because of who they are. I urge my colleagues to vote in favor of this rule. Al C. Hastings, Democrat from Florida. The White House praised the bill. Obama saying, at the root, this isn't just about our laws. This is about who we are as a people. This is about whether we value one another, whether we embrace our differences rather than allowing them to become a source of animus. Earlier this year, two psychologists in Canada declared that pedophilia is a sexual orientation just like homosexuality or heterosexuality. Von Gingman, G-I-J, Segem, a psychologist and retired professor of the University of Montreal, told members of the Canadian Parliament, pedophiles, I quote, are not simply people who commit a small offense from time to time, but rather are grappling with what is equivalent to a sexual orientation, just like another individual may be grappling with heterosexuality or even homosexuality. He went to say, true pedophiles have an exclusive preference for children, which is the same as having a sexual orientation. You cannot change this person's sexual orientation. He may, however, remain abstinent. When asked if he should be comparing pedophiles to homosexuals, Van Ginsheim replied, if, for instance, you were living in a society where heterosexuality is proscribed or prohibited, and you were told that you had to go get therapy to change your sexual orientation, you would probably say that that is slightly crazy. In other words, you would not accept that at all. I use this analogy to say that, yes, indeed, pedophiles do not change their sexual orientation. This is a man speaking, a retired psychologist speaking. Dr. Quincy, Quincey, professor emeritus of psychology at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, agreed with Van Ginsheim. Quincy said pedophile sexual interests prefer children, and there is no evidence that this sort of preference can be changed through treatment or through anything else. In July 2010, Harvard Health publication said pedophilia is a sexual orientation and unlikely to change. Treatment aims to enable someone to resist acting on his sexual urges. Linda Harvey of Mission America said that the push for pedophiles to have equal rights will become more and more common as the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual groups continue to assert themselves. It's all part of a plan to introduce sex to children at younger and younger ages, to convince them that normal friendship is actually a sexual attraction. Milton Diamond, a University of Hawaii professor and director of the Pacific Center for Sex and Society, stated that child pornography could be beneficial to society because potential sex offenders use child pornography as a substitute for sex against children. Now, before I continue, I need to throw this in there. So those children who are involved in the pornography are not being damaged by that grown person who is interacting with them? Or just 2 days ago, I read the story, or heard the story, about the man who had sex with his 3-year-old child, his daughter, and ended up having to rush her to the hospital. Because with his insanity, he ripped his own child open by penetrating her, then her body hemorrhaged, and she died. And you people want us to believe that this is okay. But getting back to Mr. Milton Diamond, Diamond is a distinguished lecturer for the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. What a joke. The IASHS openly advocated for the repeal of the Revolutionary War ban on homosexuals serving in the military. The IASHS lists on its website a list of basic sexual rights that includes the right to engage in sexual acts or activities of any kind whatsoever, providing they do not involve non-consensual acts, violence, constraints, coercion, or fraud. So if a two-year-old said, I want to have sex with you, and you do that, it's okay? They're a consenting individual? Holy cow. Another right is to be free of persecution, condemnation, discrimination, or societal intervention in private sexual behavior, and the freedom of any sexual thought, fantasy, or desire. The organization also says that no one should be disadvantaged because of age. Sex offender laws protecting children have been challenged in several states, including California, Georgia, and Iowa. Sex offenders claim the laws prohibiting them from living near schools or parks are unfair because it penalizes them. Well, there you have it. And if you knew what I knew, and I pray you know what I know, let it not be my child or any child that I know. What a shame, what a shame, what a shame. That number is 323-913. At the tone, we have a caller. Caller, please give your name and what city you're from.
Yes, this is Jason. I'm calling in from Queens, New York. Brother Howard, this is Brother Jason. Assalamu alaikum.
Sir, brother.
Yes, brother. Brother, listen. The fact of the matter is, in many of the instances, those who have the ability not only to write those laws or write the amendments that bring this into the public sphere, and not only those who are in control of the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, they have, in many instances, been through multi-generational training being set for this day and time. There has been a concerted effort over a long period of time to make this law. And not just to bring it into the social sphere. It is the supreme desire to orient a behavior for one reason and one reason only, and that's social control, social manipulation. Because if they can control the womb, they can control the people. If they can control how people view sex and reproduction, this is all in the science of mating. They can control how people spend their money, their attitudes towards crime. All of these things happen from the view of the victim, and I'm going to say the victim in this case, that has been manipulated from an early age to split the mind through sexual activity with a child. They actually ripped the mind in half. One half of the thinking of the victim in this case thinks that the person, the perpetrator, most of the time in some sort of authoritarian position, their school teacher, their counselor, their priest. This person is supposed to protect them and supposed to give them guidance.
Wow.
And in the same breath, that person, the older person who is supposed to be an authoritarian figure, now damages them in a private and a sexual way. This way, the victim, later on in life, is compliant to other suggestions, and that same victim is compliant to authoritarian figures who say, in no uncertain terms, I need you to sign this paper. Don't ask what it is. I need you to put this law on the table. Don't ask what it is. And if you are a student of the George W. Bush administration, most of those who were in leadership positions, they seemed to have the same look of abuse on their faces. You have to ask yourself, well, how is it they can vote for something that they knew is absolutely against the desire of 95% of the American people because they were coerced, because they were bullied? How is it that they can accept it now that they're grown, and even though they have their own set of thinking? No, they don't. They have been crashed as children at an early age, mm-hmm. and now when an authoritarian figure tells them what to do, no matter how big and strong they may look, they revert right back to the time, whatever age it was that they were molested, they revert right back to that time, and they force them into a childlike state, and they're able to be easily compliant. Those same children who have been molested have also been watched and promoted throughout spheres of influence, all portions of society. It's documented.
To this, Brother Jason, you know, and they've proved it out many times. It's called the Helsinki syndrome. The abuser becomes the abused and then goes along with the program of the abuser to protect the one who abused the most. As simple as that. But if this got up under your skin, check this out, Brother Jason. I found this in the Huffington Post.
Yes.
Carrie Graham. Mother breastfeeds dog to feel complete.
Oh.
Now, Carrie Graham, a mother of two, couldn't breastfeed her children, but she's now fulfilling her maternal desire in an unorthodox way by breastfeeding her 9-year-old daughter's dog, a pug named Spider. Stated in an interview published in the October 20th edition of the UK magazine Closer, Miss Graham, 44-year-old woman, said that she knows some people might consider her a freak, but insisted that her breastfeeding nourishes the dog and makes her feel like a better mom. Having Spider suckle on my boob means I finally feel complete and a better mother, Graham told her interviewer. Graham, who's not from England, but is from California, claimed that the dog developed a taste for breast milk in 2010 after licking the nipple of a bottle she had pumped for her then newborn son. She says she had breastfed the dog for about 2 years, and a photo of her breastfeeding the dog appeared in the Closer magazine and also to be found in a Reddit forum. Although the comments were riddled with jokes, one user pointed out that a British woman had repeatedly breastfed her dog in 2010. A psychologist interviewed for the magazine's piece suggested that Graham seek therapy. But stranger incidents involving canines have occurred in the British Isles. Now, wait a horn swaggling minute here.
Wow.
You would say she needs help because she breastfed her dog. But a human being doesn't need help that wants to have sex with a child? I think something's wrong with somebody. Once again, that number is 323-927-2913. This is Not So Mad Science on the Black Hole Radio Network. You just cannot make this stuff up.
It is something, Brother Harold.
Brother Jason.
Yes.
But I gotta move right along, Brother Jason.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother.
Before I pull my eyebrows out.
Continue on with the show, brother. It's always a wonderful show.
Thank you, brother. It is now 8 p.m., and did you know, brothers and sisters, that a news story of significant importance, major importance, to the people in California were squelched by our government. The question is asked, why did ABC 7 News in San Francisco tell a story that shared that a West Coast evacuation might soon be necessary because of the Fukushima meltdown in Honshu, Japan? He said, while the Google cache, talking about Google Earth, clearly shows the story, the links that take you to a page takes you to a page not found, even through the Google search link. Screenshots of a cached story and Google search link showing this dead story are below in this article. In the censored story, Dr. David Suzuki, a noted scientist, one of the Canada's top environmental scientists, stunned a listening audience when he described what will happen if a massive quake did hit today. Why is CBS censoring this story? Well, since we don't have the means of video right now, I'll share this. I had a conversation with one of the esteemed student ministers in the Nation of Islam and a noted doctor in his own right and surgeon, Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad. I had an opportunity to meet with him 2 months after the Fukushima plant explosion. And in that conversation, because I am a practitioner, a noted authority by some on disaster mitigation, not remediation, not preparedness, but disaster mitigation. And in that conversation, I explained to Brother Aleem, Dr. Aleem, I said, brother, do you know the radiation, the irradiated water, H2O2, heavy water, is sitting in a massive bubble just floating out into the Pacific. That bubble, due to the natural course of tidal flows and undercurrents and the different channels of water in the Pacific Ocean, is going to push that bubble of irradiated water over time to the western shore, the west coast of the United States. And when it hits, it will do like any bubble, normal bubble does. It will hit, it will squash down and begin to spread out in an elongated form like a balloon would when it touches up against the surface. And that would then irradiate the entire western seaboard from Alaska all the way down through Mexico going into Argentina. This is 2 months after the Fukushima plant explosion. Well, guess what? That bubble is on the way. Irradiated fish have been found within 600 miles of the western shore of the United States of America. And it's encroaching more and more every day. They made a mistake. They let the story get out. Then they killed it. Be mindful. We live in a dangerous time. Be mindful. Do your homework. Be mindful. And be careful. Be very, very careful. We're now going on 5 minutes after the hour. I want to share some other scientific news with you. News of great importance, as far as I'm concerned, is more spiritual science than anything else. Noted physicist, noted doctor of physics, Professor Robert Lanza, wrote an article for Science and Technology magazine. Dr. Lanza says, quantum physics proves that there is an afterlife. He says most scientists would probably say that the concept of an afterlife is either nonsense or at the very least unprovable. Yet one expert claims he has evidence to confirm an existence beyond the grave, and it lies in quantum physics. Professor Robert Lanza claims the theory of biocentrism teaches that death as we know it, it is an illusion created by consciousness. We think life is just the activity of carbon and an admixture of molecules. We live in a while and then rot in the ground, said the scientist on his website. Lanza, noted professor, is from Wake Forest University School of Medicine in North Carolina. He continued that as humans, we believe in death because we've been taught we die. Or more specifically, our consciousness associates life with bodies, and we know that bodies die. Theory of biocentrism, however, claims and explains that death may not be as terminal as we think it is. Biocentrism is classed as a theory of everything and comes from the Greek language for the word for life-centered. It is the belief that life and biology are central to reality and that life creates the universe, not the other way around. This suggests a person's consciousness determines the shape and size of objects in the universe. Lanza uses the example of the way we perceive the world around us. A person sees a blue sky and is told color they are seeing is blue. But the cells in a person's brain could be changed to make the sky look green or red. By looking at the universe or from a biocentric point of view, this also means space and time don't behave in the hard and fast ways our consciousness tells us it does. In summary, space and time are simply tools of our mind. Once this theory about space and time being mental constructs is accepted, it means death and the idea of immortality exist in a world without spatial or linear boundaries. Theoretical physicists believe that there is an infinite number of universes with different variations of people and situations taking place simultaneously. Lanza added that everything which can possibly happen is occurring at some point across these multiverses, and this means death can't exist in any real sense either. Lanza instead said that when we die, our life becomes a perennial flower that returns to bloom in the multiverse. Bottom line, what you see could not be present without your consciousness, explains Professor Lanza. Our consciousness makes sense of the world. By looking at the universe from a biocentric point of view, this also means space and time don't behave in the hard, fast ways our consciousness tells us it does. I just wanted to share that article with you, brothers and sisters, because I want to share a definition given to me by my father's eldest child, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He gave a new definition for the meaning of death in life. And in his definition, in this definition, the real deal, he said death is the absence of the movement of living. Anything that is alive is doing something. It is moving. It is a valuable final product. It is producing something. So anything that is stagnant and doing nothing, niggardly is what? Dead. Can you be alive and be dead? Yes. Look at the black man and woman in America and the condition that they're in. We are a dead people. We have done nothing. And our sojourn here in this wilderness of North America, not until we began to move, evolve, and revolve around an idea which then gave us life. Therefore, we can see that Professor Lanza's premise, theorem, does bear weight. When the mind is active, the mind is producing. Therefore, the mind will produce the environment and the reality that it needs to sustain itself. So I thought this bit of quantum physics was relevant and pertinent for you all to hear this evening, because we're going to go into it. We're going to devote an entire program to this idea of biocentrism. But I want to jump to a bit of mathematics. Do you all know what the Bohm-Bohm conjecture is? I'm going to venture to say that most of us don't. I do, because this is just the kind of thing that I'm into. But on June 7th in 1742, German mathematician Christian Goldbach, G-O-L-D-B-A-C-H, wrote a letter to his friend and also mathematician Leonhard Euler, E-U-L-E-R, in which he proposed the following conjecture. He says, every integer which can be written as the sum of two prime numbers, can also be written as the sum of as many primes as one wishes, until all terms are units. He then proposed a second conjecture in the margin of his letter. Every integer greater than 2 can be written as the sum of 3 prime numbers. At that time, Goldbach considered 1 to be a prime number, a convention subsequently abandoned by mathematicians in the modern era. The two conjectures are now known to be equivalent, but this did not seem to be an issue at the time. A modern version of Goldbach's marginal conjecture is this. Every integer greater than 5 can be written as the sum of 3 primes. Euler replied in a letter dated June 30, 1742, and reminded Goldbach of an earlier conversation they had, in which Goldbach remarked his original and not marginal conjecture followed with the following statement. Every even integer greater than 2 can be written as the sum of 2 primes. Now, Brother Harum, why in the heck are you sharing this with us on Not So Mad Science? We are not mathematicians. We do not know what the heck you're talking about. Don't get it twisted, brothers and sisters. You are mathematicians. This is relevant to you because it's been over 270 years since anyone with the mathematical acumen has come along to be able to prove the Goldbach conjecture. Every time you heard of mathematicians who were doing great things, it was always a Jewish fellow. Not that it shouldn't be. Or a Chinese fellow or lady. Somebody not like you and me. Well, let me tell you this. This 270-plus-year-old mathematical conundrum has been solved. It has been proven out that no other mathematician has been able to do. Your brother from the African country a former bus driver, I think he was, a black man, has now put the African continent on the mathematical map once again. He has solved the Goldbach conjecture and proved it out and proved it to be so. Don't remember his name off the top of my head at this particular moment because his name is not something that is readily pronounceable to me. But I will endeavor to make sure it's posted on the website for you to have, brothers and sisters. All you need to do to get that information is to go to blackholeradio.com, or you can go to Black Hole Radio on Facebook, and you can find and just look for the Goldbach conjecture, and you'll find there the full spread story of the brother in the African country of Guinea that solved this problem that has existed for 270-plus years that no one else could find. So I want to say, not kudos, but I want to say Allahu Akbar, the rise of the dark continent has begun in the world of the mathematical sciences. Thank you, brother. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're now going on 18 minutes after the hour, and we want to remove, matter of fact, I'm going to correct myself. It is a 270-year-old mathematical problem, and it was a Guinean mathematician. His name is Ibrahima Sambego Diallo. I'll say that again. Ibrahima Sambego Diallo. He solved a 270-year-old mathematical problem. And he was a former writer for a very small and unproductive newspaper who decided to change careers and become a mathematician. And it took him 14 years of hard work to finally come up with the answer. And this one problem places him in the court of the great mathematicians of the world. Had he been in a contest, like any other mathematician who go after unsolvable mathematical problems, he'd be a very wealthy man. But he did this out of the love of his heart for the purest form of solving a mathematical problem. So, Brother Ibrahima Sambego Diallo, I raise my hand to you and I bow and I salute you. May God continue to bless you with continued fortune in your mathematical pursuits. So, let's continue. I want to jump to how many of you, brothers and sisters, and I'm going to give a number, 239-272913, have ever heard of Lake Turkana? I bet none of you have heard of it. But I bet quite a few of you have heard of Lake Rudolph. Now, why, Brother Harold, is this interesting to us? I want to show you a pattern of behavior. The lake was named Lake Rudolph in honor of the Crown Prince Rudolph of Austria by Count Samuel Teleki de Zeke and his second-in-command, Lieutenant Ludwig Ritter von Hummel, a Hungarian and an Austrian, on the 6th of March in 1888. They were the first Europeans to have recorded visiting the lake after a long safari across East Africa. Natives who live around the lake said the name of the lake was Lake Turkana. Lake Turkana included Rendille, Gabara, and Dasanach, Hamakok, Karu, Nigastoma, Anigastam, Mercy, Sumra, and Molo peoples. For the location of many of these peoples refer to the dialectic map that we will provide for you on our website. But here's what really gets interesting. We decided, is the quote from Count Samuel and his lieutenant Ludwig Rieder von Hahnel, to change the name because the people there did not speak the same language. Ain't that something? Isn't that something? We just gonna change it because all you together don't speak the same language, so why should we call it what you call it? The audacity to say such a thing. What kind of people do these things? What kind of people make these kind of decisions? You're on a safari. Basically, they're on vacation. They're hunting. You come across a lake. Oh, I'm going to name this lake after Joe Schmo because I can, because the people that live here, they don't make the maps. I'm a map maker, so we're going to call it what we want on the map. And we're going to send that map around the world. We don't care. That takes a strange kind of mind. But that takes us back to the words of the professor earlier on in the program. The mind of white superiority over the darker peoples of the earth. There's something wrong there. There's something very, very, very wrong there. So that's the story, the quick version of Lake Turkana. And it's now 8:24 p.m., 24 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, here on Not So Mad Science on the Black Hole Radio Network. So with these remaining 6 minutes, I want to share this from my heart. I want to share it with you. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. Don't be found dead man walking. Be found a live man talking. Do something with yourself. Keep the faith. Don't go out like a coward because you believe somebody has something more than what you got. Keep the faith. A young boy had three smooth stones, while the giant had a broad sword. Massive size and an army behind him. But the little boy had three smooth stones, a piece of cloth, and a string. You know his name. Who won the war? Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. Don't go out like no punk. Stand up. Stand tall, keep talking, keep walking, and let the God above you inspire you to be something more than you already are. If you're ever in the city of Detroit, Michigan, stop by 14880 14880 Wyoming Avenue and allow student minister Troy X to inspire you with the life-giving teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad given to him by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And if you happen to be in the city of New York, city so nice that they named it twice, New York, New York, the Big Apple, stop by 127th Street and Lenox Avenue and allow student minister Abdul Hafiz Muhammad inspire you with the life-giving teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad given to him by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And if you happen to be in the Windy City, Chi-Town, Chicago, Illinois, Hucklebuck on down, Stony Island, to the flagship mosque, Mosque Mariam, mosque number two, the Nation of Islam, and allow the National Assistant Student Minister, Ismail Muhammad, one of the sons of the exalted Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to inspire you with the words of the Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, taught to him by our brother, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Or find any brother in the highways and byways in the streets of throughout America and get yourself a copy of the Final Call newspaper. Here in Detroit, we have brother student Captain Roy X, to soldier a man to move the Final Call to help reach the people. In the city of New York, I call him 6-9, the Long 20, brother student Captain Richard Muhammad, soldier the men to move the Final Call newspaper to bring the word of Muhammad to the people in the streets. And in Chicago, we have student regional captain, the X-Man, Grandmaster, Brother Anthony Muhammad, to teach and train the men to reach the people in the street with the Final Call newspaper, the number one program of the Nation of Islam. Make all men and boys join the FOI. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. And thank you for joining me on this edition of Not So Mad Science on the Black Hole Radio Network. I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad. Keep the faith, and we'll be back. See you next Thursday. I'm out.
I remember when radio used to be just like this. You turn on the radio and you actually get something for your money worth, even though it's free. You had to pay for no satellite radio back then. You had good solid radio for your brain, something that make you think. I remember. Now that's that black hole radio. Or Blog Talk Radio.